Welcome to episode 142 of the Active Photographer Podcast, your behind-the-scenes glimpse into the day-to-day life of a working professional photographer, with me, Giles Babbage. The beginning of last week, and the weekend leading up to it, saw the inaugural outing for an exciting new event, the Photography Show. Many see this as the natural successor to Focus on Imaging, and as you would expect, I was there, audio recorder in hand. As ever, I'll be bringing you my conversations in the coming days. But to kick things off, let's take a listen to my chat with Nikon, catching up on news of their latest products and exciting collaborations in the world of television broadcast. Here we go then. Welcome, one and all, to The Active Photographer, episode 142. Once again, I am stood on the Nikon stand, and in a short while I'm going to be catching up with Rob McNeice, who a lot of you have heard me speaking to all probably, I forget how many years now, every year I always catch up with Rob and we talk about the latest developments and what have you. This year we're going to be talking about the Nikon D4S and of course the DF, which has caused quite a lot of interest over recent months. But at the moment I am stood here with Steve Boland, who is from the Mark Roberts Motion Control organization, and we've spoken about this in the past. This is sort of robotic controlled cameras and at events and this, that and the other, but there are exciting developments. So Steve, just tell me what we've got going on, what's in front of us, and what this beckons for the future and for this year.
Good morning, Giles. Well, what we have here is a six-axis robot which is performing pre-programmed moves. On the front of the robot is a Nikon D4S. So we're running this in a video mode, and we're taking a signal out of the D4S, so we're taking uncompressed HDMI, converting that to SDI, and we're creating a feed that's replicating what will soon be shown at London Live, which is a new TV channel that's owned by the Evening Standard. It's a news and current affair, station. It's going live at the end of March. So they're using a number of robotic camera systems, from our small compact system over in the corner there, which is an AFC 100, which is a straightforward pan and tilt system, to the studio robot in front of us, which is on a track. So in fact, there's up to nine axes of movement on this robot, from the track, the six axes on the arm itself, together with zoom and focus external motors that can be applied for video mode. The images coming off really do show the benefits of the D4S on the robot. There's none of the rolling shutter artifacts that you see with single CMOS chips, and we really are putting it through some fast pans with some very smooth movement. The other advantage being that this will also run at full 1080, 50 or 60p, so you get some incredible motion.
And it really is. I mean, I've seen over the last few days, as we record this, it's the last day of the photography show, and as I've been sort of passing by over the last few days, it has generated this interest. You know, there's always a huddle of people around it. We've got behind it, we've got a screen which is obviously, like as you say, showing the live feed. In previous years, last year at Focus on Imaging, we saw a talk that was talking about camera arrays, that sort of thing, and a sort of how these cameras are being used, just to push. It's a much used phrase, of course, much bandied around, you know, sort of pushing the boundaries. But this is the future of broadcast, and things getting smaller, more refined. I suppose it's an exciting time for you, and also the collaborations that the people that are approaching you within those industries, that you are now able to answer questions and find solutions for them, which in previous years the technology was holding them back.
Sure. Absolutely. I think I think one of the key things for certainly for new ideas of in broadcast is differentiating a look, is to have a defining look. And I think one of the things that was interesting for London Live is, for a news station anyway, for the attraction of the 35mm sensor for a shallow depth of field. And when you see in a news environment, it really kind of brings out the presenter with a blurred background, but the presenter pops out. Mm. So you marry that with some smooth automated movements around that, and you get some very interesting creative results. Mm. So the thing that brings it together, I think, is because maybe a DSLR hasn't got the right ergonomics as a video camera, but when it's in a robotic solution, the way that you would need to hold the camera changes. So you can do more with motors around it. You know, you don't the actual human interaction. Mm. So that tactile.
And it's such a smooth motion. I mean, there is no, as you'd expect, but there is no jarring, even when the arm stops and then goes in the opposite direction. Everything is absolutely seamless. Yeah. So the development in that must have been, you know, you have the camera, but also you have all this stuff behind it that has to work perfectly as well to complement, to get the benefit out of the technology that's attached to it.
Yes. Well, the key is to be able to repeat moves accurately every time. Certainly if you're going to put automation into a studio, you need to rely on those moves that are going to be the same week in, week out, year in, year out. So that's a very important part of the software that goes into behind the mechanics of these robots, is to work, is to calculate those moves. So there is a kind of tapering off at the end of each move.
Yeah.
So that's very much part of the programming and the software behind it.
And obviously we're looking at some setups here with this camera on the arm is a shorter focal length, and then the one on the smaller unit is a telephoto there.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, when you're talking about working in a studio and working with broadcast, you're going to be looking at these smaller focal lengths. In theory, at least, what is the largest lens that you would be able to attach to the bracket if you needed to on something like, either of these units? So if you needed it to be sort of in a corner of a stadium, for example, or at the sidelines or something, or to get the access to a far distant point, what are the limitations there?
It's purely down to weight. So it's down to weight and balance. So in a broadcast environment on the smaller head, we take typically up to a 40 by 10 lens, so it's a 400mm lens on a 2/3 inch sensor camera. So the payload is about 14 kilos on a head that size. A little bit less on the robot that's, you know, doing more movements. So we're looking at probably, you know, maybe 8 kilos on the robot arm.
That's
so
still a fair weight.
Yeah. And then it's just to do with bracketry of how you balance the lens, where you place the lens along the camera bracket. But there's some fairly simple solutions to it.
And are those brackets bespoke to the system and the Nikon system that's in place, or is it sort of essentially off the shelf, or has it been machined specifically for a set purpose?
Yeah, no, we work with some of the existing brackets on the long lenses Nikon. They work seamlessly with our camera attachments on the robotics.
And how the setup that we've got here, if that was to be set up in the studio and you wanted to start your broadcasting, what is the setup time to, you know, to get everything, you know, you've got to do your testing, make sure the link's alive and everything is working. Is it like a day to set it up? Is it a matter of hours? Or
it's a matter of hours, really. The robot that's going into the studio has hydraulic wheels, so it goes to the end of the track, lifts itself up off the tracks, and you just push it along. The camera interfacing is very simple. We've got an Ethernet cable there, we've got a HDMI to SDI converter, and we've got power running, so that's three cables that need to be plugged in there. And then really it's just a creative process from there. It just depends on how complicated the move needs to be.
And that goes back to what we were saying, the creative side. It's like with anything in photography, it's a given that you have the equipment that's going to allow you to realise your vision.
Yes.
And I know, again, it's one of those terms bandied around, but that is what photography is about, whether it's in a studio for broadcast, whether it's on the sidelines of a football pitch, or whether it's someone that's like myself that's up a hillside, up the top of a mountain range or something, that's you know, trying to capture that moment, trying to tell those stories. I think it's fantastic. I think every year you guys, you know, we always talk and there's always something new, you know, and that's what I love about photography, have done for years, and I dare say it's not going to stop, and we keep pushing those boundaries, and you know, that's what's exciting.
Well, absolutely, this is all of this is an extension of the photographer's eye, and it's just adding to the toolbox to allow to get into more unusual positions.
And I love that these kind of shows give people the access to see that, so that when they're at home watching these programs on TV or what have you, they can think, oh, I saw that actually up close, and they get a better understanding of what they're taking in on the TV screens. I think it's brilliant. So I think, Steve, thank you very much for your time. If people want to check out more about this and the projects that you've got going on and your collaborations with Nikon and all these things that we've been talking about, where can they go?
The best thing is our website, which is www.mrmcco.com, so mrmoco.com, where we keep abreast with all our latest developments. There's blogs, there's our Twitter feed. You can find out all the latest about our robotic developments.
Excellent. Well, for those of you that are listening, I know a lot of you listen when you're in the car or on the train or doing what have you. Of course, in the show notes, I will be linking to the website, so don't worry if you didn't quite catch that. And I've got quite a bit of background noise, but you know, these recordings are made live. We don't stitch or edit any of the audio, so I'll be linking to that in due course for the show notes. But Steve, for now, thank you very much for your time. Always
you,
a pleasure to catch up with you guys. Cheers.
Okay, cheers. Thank you.
So now I've walked across and I'm catching up with Rob McNeice, and we are going to be talking about a couple of developments, a couple of cameras, the D4S and the DF. Rob, we have the DF in front of us. We're going to try and barge our way through. It's always fun and games here, because of course you're here to help the public and I'm just grabbing you as and when I can. So let's keep an eye on it and we can talk about it in the meantime and what have you. So a lot of people are aware of the DF. It's kind of one of those things that it looks different. It's the whole retro thing. Well, I'll let you tell us. Give us an overview.
Well, I think the DF comes from a lot of feedback we've had from photographers. I personally worked for Nikon for 9 years, and certainly in the time I've worked, one question I've had probably more than any is, why don't Nikon produce a DSLR with all that fantastic technology but looks and feels just like the old FM, FE, all our old great cameras from the 1970s and 80s. So we've done that with the DF, and it's a phenomenal camera. I've used one myself for a couple of weeks and taken it away with me, and not only does it look the part, but it really has got all the latest technology and a superb sensor as well.
And in true nods to the past, it's available in the two colour ways, as it were. You've got the brushed metal look, which we all love and adore from the past, and I gather it's available in the black, like the modern black, as it were.
Absolutely. I think the jury's out on which one's a favourite. For me, it's certainly the silver one, the chrome looking one, because my first introduction was the FE2, my first introduction to Nikon, and I had that in silver. I love it. I think the styling's absolutely great. But in terms of specification, of course, they're both exactly the same in terms of what they deliver.
So, okay, let's just, obviously we can't talk about every single feature, we'd be here all afternoon and what have you. The highlight features of the DF.
Well, I think the most important thing about the camera, like with virtually any DSLR, is the sensor. It is the tried and trusted sensor from the D4. So it's a fantastic 16.2 million pixel FX CMOS sensor, so it's full frame. And it really does deliver very good results, especially in low light.
And because with the Nikon lens fitting, it's compatible with all the lenses that you would use on your D4s, on your...
Absolutely.
I still shoot on a D3, I love its bits. Okay. A lot of people say, how is it so clean and tidy? I've got it around my shoulder here.
I can't remember seeing a D3 quite good condition, actually. You really look after it.
There's a few scuffs on the corner there, and I do put it through quite a bit of wear, but again, it's all these things, you know, if you look after it. But again, people often say, what camera should I get, da 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 da.
Yeah.
It's the lenses, it's the glass on the front of those cameras to take advantage of all this technology that's built into these cameras.
That's right.
That's what you want to be looking. So let's think about some other technical side of the camera, because there's a lot, when you look at it, as a gentleman just sort of having a play with it at the moment, when you look at it, there's all these sort of retro knobs and dials and what have you.
Yeah.
The ergonomic side of thing is great, but of course you want to have the key features available and quick to hand, so we can now get our hands on it.
Yeah. So it really is a nod to the old great film Nikon F series cameras from the 70s and 80s, and holding it in your hands, it does really hark back to the days of the FE, the FM, FE2 and FM2. So you've got a very, very positive shutter dial on there, so you can click the shutter speeds, all the standard shutter speeds from 30 seconds right down to a 4,000th of a second. You've got a bulb mode and you've got a timed exposure mode as well. You've also got the old traditional X setting for flash sync, as some of us
were growing
nice up
touch.
With older cameras will remember. Of course, it's got a standard PC socket for flash, so compatible with any sort of studio flash system. You've also got a very positive ISO dial on there as well, on the top left hand, on the top plate, so you can click that round just in the same way as you would with the old film cameras. So it's very positive, you can easily see what settings you're in. You've got the exposure compensation dial
as well. I think that's a lovely feature.
Isn't it lovely?
I remember with the old press and twist type settings, you know.
Yeah,
that's lovely.
Exactly. Well, the styling on it is just like with the old Nikon cameras. Another nice feature is this little dial on the front, which at first glance looks like it should be a cover for a sync or something. This is actually how you control the aperture on the camera.
Oh, right.
So you've got the aperture control here, and you've got the shutter control on the top of the camera. But as well as having the sort of the looks and the style, it's also got all the modern features of all our other modern DSLRs. So you can actually control the shutter speed using the rear command dial. If I put it into this third step mode, rather than just having the individual stops, I can change now in third stop increments, so I can be incredibly sort of detailed, very small adjustments to the shutter speed on the camera.
And that's one of the, when I'm talking to people and they say about settings and how to control your camera and get the most out of the sensor and what have you.
Yes.
For me, one of the most overlooked settings is exposure compensation.
It's
just
very
a
important.
Third of a stop can make a heck
Absolutely.
Of a difference
Absolutely.
To your pictures.
Yeah, well, when I was lucky enough to use this in Sochi, and I was able to see from outside the stadium, the closing ceremony of the Winter Olympics, and there were fireworks going off. Mm. Anyone that's tried to take pictures of fireworks know that the light levels are changing all the time.
Yeah.
So using this third step here, I was able to very intricately change the exposure on the fireworks. We did that very easily and then very quickly changed the ISO as well.
And whilst we're sort of on the subject of lighting and exposure,
yeah.
a lot of people listening to this love their off-camera flash, they love to experiment. You've got a traditional hot shoe, of course, on the top. But one of the things that I love with the Nikon system, which is one of the reasons I went with Nikon way back when, is the lighting system. I have to say is a far superior system to, shall we say, other manufacturers.
Absolutely.
But this camera, of course, takes advantage of the system and the flash guns and everything that's available.
It does, absolutely. It's got a fully TTL system, so it's got the Nikon standard contacts that you get in any of our modern DSLRs. So that means that you can use the Nikon Creative Lighting System. So you can put one of our flash guns on top of the camera, and you can control remote flash guns wirelessly using infrared technology. So it does that very well. You can also use the Nikon SU800, which is our little infrared remote controller, to control a number of other flash guns. So you can do that for a studio setup and just to be a little bit more creative with your flash photography.
That's excellent. Well, let's put the DF down
now,
and if we can make our way to a D4S.
If I take you around to this, this other stand around here.
Okay, so we're just kind of battling our way through the crowds, which is never a bad thing to have to do, really. It's just when I have to take the cameras away from people for us to be able to have a look. But we're just going to see if a 4S is available. Just trying to fill some time here for you guys. We might have to do the same thing again, Rob. Let's just have a bit of a chat, and then when one comes available, we'll get our hands on it. Okay, so we've jumped back into the present in terms of looks.
Yes.
People will be aware of the D series, the 3, the 3S, the 4, and now, of course, the 4S.
Yeah.
We spoke to Steve just a moment ago about sort of live motion image and that sort of thing, which takes advantage of the D4S. A lot of people are going to be looking with a lot of interest, and it's going to be one of those cameras they're going to be swooning over and dreaming of owning.
Yeah.
Again, let's talk about to bring that line up to date. What's new on the 4S? And how it's taking advantage of the technology now.
Sure. Well, the 4S takes all the great things that photographers know and love about the D4. I mean, the D4 has sold incredibly well for us. I remember speaking to you about that when it first came out 2 years ago. And since then, it's definitely stood the test of time. But we've spoken to photographers and we've got some feedback. So whilst the D4S essentially looks very much like the D4, there's not many ergonomic changes. There are a couple, but ultimately it looks just like the D4, but it's got a lot of new technology in there. So we've actually got a new sensor. It's the same resolution because we believe 16.2 million pixels for press photographers and sports photographers is a nice balance of good resolution. You can still crop into your images, you can still get a very good reproduction, but it doesn't give you those huge file sizes that some of the other DSLRs do. So we believe that's the perfect resolution for the top end sports and press photographers and many other areas. But it is a new sensor. It does deliver even cleaner results. We've also tweaked the autofocus, so having feedback from a lot of professional photographers, and the camera has been tested by the best professional sports photographers in the world, and they've given us some very valuable feedback on the camera, and I have to say it's all been hugely positive. So the focusing is now quicker than it was on the D4, so it's quicker to acquire focus. It will actually acquire focus in lower light as well, but more importantly than all of that, I think especially for sports guys, is the tracking on the camera. The focus tracking is now really great, and what photographers have been telling us is whereas previously they may have got an 80, maybe perhaps a 90% hit rate on their shots, because the camera's great, but it's not always going to get every shot sharp, exactly sharp. They're now getting more like a 95% hit rate. So I think that's one of the big improvements we've made with the D4S.
And of course you touch on their sort of low light working, and one of the great advantages that people that are coming into photography now won't know what it was like to have to choose your film and be stuck with it for 36 frames.
Yeah, absolutely. We
just take it for granted that we can go from ISO 100 up to 6400 or what have you. What is the upper limits on the D4S?
Well, this is now got a native ISO, so two ISOs. It's got a base of 100 and it goes up to 25,600, but you've got four stops above that. So above that you've got a 51,000, then you've got 102,000, 204, and now you've got a 408,000 ISO equivalent.
And a lot of people will be wondering why you don't just say it goes from this to this, why you have it goes up to this and then you've got four more settings.
Okay, well the answer to that is because I believe is that it doesn't actually conform to the international standards, so we have I've never known a photographer to notice any difference. You know, it's good enough as close to that, but we can't actually say that because it doesn't actually conform to that standard.
At the end of the day, it's a bit like if you go into a shoe shop and say I am a size 9, they say, well, try this on, and say, oh, but it's a size 10, you say, but I'm a size 9. It doesn't matter what you label it.
No, absolutely.
It's as long as it's giving you what you want. It's the same with ISO.
Exactly.
And it's even on the D3, that was it's groundbreaking with the ISO,
really,
and it's as good, I would say, pretty much now as it was when I first got it.
Yeah.
And it's very rare that even at 6400 that I have to put any noise reduction on my images. And you'll look at the images on the screen, but when they actually go to press, when they're printed at whatever scale or online, you don't notice it anyway. It's only when you look at the sort of like 400% in Photoshop that you can start to get. You think, oh, is that too much? It doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't. I think photographers are very discerning these days, and we've kind of spoiled photographers with high ISOs.
Yeah.
Like you say, you could imagine years ago we're using film that we would be going to the kind of ISOs that we do now.
Yeah.
But you really can push into with the D4S. So you could shoot, I would say, 50,000 ISO, and you could get images that are usable, if it was, say, in very low light for wedding photography or sports photography in dimly lit stadiums.
And again, it's situations where you think there is not enough light to shoot this picture, but now you think, well, I'll just take a punt on it, and all of a sudden you've got all the detail in the shadows.
That's right.
The highlights don't even blow out in street lamps or what have you.
No.
Of course, I'm always out and about. I'm in woodland, on hillsides, this, that, and the other. And one of the issues for me is weatherproofing.
Okay.
And I know with the D3, again, I shoot on a D800 as well. It's more of a studio camera for me, I've got to admit. Or a more controlled environment, shall we say. It does go outdoors, of course, but with the D4S, what have you guys done in terms of making sure that when you are out and about, dirt and grime is kind of kept at bay around the finer points, the doors and the dials?
Well, it is the very best of weather sealing in any DSLR camera. It's the same standard we've had in the D4 and the D3 before that. So every single dial, every single part that protrudes from that camera has got a rubber weather seal on it. And we've spoken to photographers that have used this camera in grueling conditions, you know, in snow, dust storms, British summertime.
We've had a hell of a winter.
Absolutely. So you know, we believe that the camera is second to none in terms of the environments that you can put it to. And I think for a lot of explorers, and we've spoken to people who've been on Arctic conditions and so on, and in the Winter Olympics as well, one day it was mostly blue skies, but one day there were actually snow blizzards during the half pipe. And I spoke to a photographer, he didn't actually have a cover on his camera, and it was fine. It was actually fine.
Yeah.
So the camera will stand up to a lot of rough conditions.
And I've found that as well. You know, times when you think I should really be heading undercover, you just think, no, I know the limits of this camera. It's the only time I've ever known a camera to go a bit funny was when I was shooting from a rib boat.
Okay.
A beautiful sunny summer's day, and a wave went over. It was a D2H.
Okay. Yeah.
And the menu sort of flickered a little bit, and the screen disappeared for 2 minutes. It dried out, and it was fine. You know.
They usually will survive.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
What I like about Nikon is that when you develop your cameras, you still stay true to a system whereby you can pick up pretty much any camera, and you know it feels instinctive because things haven't changed too much.
No, absolutely. You know? Right through from the entry level cameras, let's say the D3300, right through to the D4S, the menu design is the same on all of them. A lot of the basic layout and the buttons on the back to control the menu and the playback are all exactly the same, and we have stayed exactly true to that for all of our range.
Rob, it's always a pleasure to catch up with you. I know you're very busy, and I know you're very kind to give me the time of day. A lot of people are going to want to see or find out more about these cameras, things that we've talked about. Where should they go? I'll put it in the show notes, of course. I'll put a link, but where should they go?
Well, obviously, there's a lot of information available on the Nikon website, which is www.nikon.co.uk. We've also got a link to DigiTutor, which is something that gives photographers and people that are interested in our cameras a little bit of tutoring on the cameras as well. And something that I'd have to say is our new Nikon School, which was launched last year. We've got some fantastic courses available for those of you that are getting started with DSLRs or just want to know about their camera. There's a wide range of courses that we have available now, and that's based just off of Oxford Circus in central London. So it's a nice central location, certainly for people in the southeast. Yes.
Excellent. And that's the thing, you know, these cameras we're talking about, people maybe are aspiring to, but there is plenty on offer in your range for people that are starting out. And at the end of the day, you would agree, it's the kit is important, but just get something, get out there and start shooting, and it'll
absolutely
all happen. Get a bit of advice and you'll enjoy it. That's what it's about, right?
Absolutely, yeah. It's all about the passion we all have, isn't it, at the end
Excellent.
Of the day.
Rob, thank you very much for your time. Always
no
appreciate
problem at
it.
All.
We'll catch up soon.
Likewise. Thank
Cheers.
You.
Be sure to check out the website in the coming days when I'll be uploading the other conversations recorded live at the photography show. You can check out all the show notes to this and other week's shows at theactivephotographer.com. If you'd like to get in touch directly, don't forget I'm on Twitter at Giles Babbage. There's the Facebook page, facebook.com/theactivephotographer. Or of course, send me a good old-fashioned email, giles@theactivephotographer.com. So thanks for listening, everyone. Take care, have a great week, and I will speak to you all very soon.
Member of the CurrentPhotographer.com podcast network. Find more great photography shows at CurrentPhotographer.com/podcast.